Welcome to the 359. I'm Ben Fox Rubin.
I'm Joni Salzman.
I'm Alfred Ng.
Along with smart homes, we're now seeing a growing trend of smart rentals. Alfred wrote about landlords fitting apartment units with internet-connected locks, thermostats, and other sensors. The problem is that some tenants don't actually want this technology and don't want to feel like they're being monitored. So, Alfred, first question, is there any recourse for renters if all of a sudden my apartment unit is going to be turned into a smart rental?
Moving out, that is really the only recourse.
It?
Yeah. So because this technology is so new, you know, people really associate smart homes with like something you do for your own apartment or anything like that. They don't really see it as your landlord doing that for you. So there's no one's like filed a lawsuit about this, and there's no laws like protecting you from your landlord doing this to you currently because it's so new. So right now, really, the only thing you can tell your landlord is, I don't want this, and hopefully your landlord is a chill person, or you can move out.
I think people that forcibly create smart homes are very chill people, just generally.
Let's talk about it from the landlord perspective. Why do they want to spend, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to add this type of technology into their units? Is there like a benefit for them? Is there a potential benefit for tenants?
Yeah, it's definitely helpful for landlords. And not all tenants hate this. You know, they want to be able to control their thermostat. All the reasons that you would want a smart home. There are a lot of people that have privacy and security concerns about it. But, you know, for landlords, that means that they can monitor water and energy usage from their phones. They don't have to make a new key every time. They can just like make a new code for new tenants. Also, this is something that like some tenants actually want, and you know, they can charge higher rent or attract more people to rent from them if it's a smart home and they don't have to do it themselves.
So to me, this is an interesting aspect of smart cities. Smart cities is this big concept that started many years ago. Mm-hmm. And one of the primary concerns with smart cities is you can't opt out.
Yeah.
So that kind of sucks that if you don't like this technology, you're basically, your option is to move out or whatever.
Yeah, I think a big difference is, though, is that with smart cities, it's not like in your house. Like you expect your house to be a place where you're private and your landlord doesn't know like all this information about you. Like considering that, you know, it logs every time you use the code on your door or how often it's used, it basically means your landlord knows like when you're in and out of your house. Like constantly, you know, there are laws that say that landlords have to give you 24 hours notice before like coming into your house. But with something like this, it's like they're, you know, they've got a virtual presence in your home at all times.
Yeah. Next, at the Tribeca Film Festival immersive program this year, creators are working to change up VR experiences a little to focus more on interactive experiences. Joan, can you tell us a little about this?
Yeah. So, every year, because virtual reality and mixed reality are sort of the main immersive storytelling formats today, every year, and because they're developing so quickly, every year at a thing like Tribeca or at Sundance, there's kind of new advancements in what you can do. And it seems like this year, people are really stressing heightened interactivity that hopefully actually feels natural, and also location-based entertainment, what's known as LBE, which is something that you can't just do by putting on a headset in your living room. You have to go to a specific place, usually pay for a ticket price, and get an experience that way. That's where you have things like live actors interacting with you when you're in VR.
Is the expectation that some of these ideas are actually going to push VR forward? Because, you know, from reading your story, it seemed pretty clear that a lot of these creators understood that most folks really don't like sticking a VR helmet on their face.
Yeah, the fact that VR headsets haven't been as popular as the hype of the last couple of years would have led some people to hope means that's a reason why people are really diving into LBE. It's an idea where, you know, immersive theater is a really popular thing. Going to arcades was a popular thing. They're hoping that maybe that they can find a business model and a format that finds an appeal headsets haven't really gone mass.
I get it. It's kind of like going to a concert or something.
Just do what Pokemon Go did for AR, where like nobody cared about it until Pokemon was involved. Just put Pokemon Go at Tribeca Film Festival
just like
on
Pokemon
this VR.
Solved.
Yeah. And it'll be extremely popular.
Last, and I know we don't have much time, I wanted to get to this. Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg said the future of communication is now in private and encrypted services like WhatsApp. This kind of doesn't jibe very well because it's Zuckerberg, and Zuckerberg had been pushing everybody to share everything about themselves on Facebook. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about this?
There's a lot going on here.
Skeptics of his, you know, claims have basically argued that he's making this whole privacy push now so that he can basically consolidate WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook Messenger into one messaging app, which he does lay out in his plan for privacy. But also, I think the writing's been on the wall for a while that, you know, not as many people want to post on Facebook publicly anymore.
Right.
You know, a lot of like younger people have flocked to platforms like Snapchat where it doesn't last forever. Every privacy scandal that's happened with Facebook in the last year, I think he knows that, you know, people don't want their lives digitally like out in public like that anymore.
Right. And,
like,
and preserved forever. So,
But again, like, people have a right to be skeptical about, you know, his claims, considering, you know, this is the fortune that, that Facebook built its empire on, and now they're aren't saying that they're going to turn against all of that.
Well, I think that they actually aren't saying they're going to turn against all of that. The way that he kind of messaged it was that, like, oh man, privacy is the new black, like, this is what it's all about. But
which is crazy.
But from what it seems like in follow-up interviews, he's saying like, oh, no, the news feed's still saying it'll still continue as it is. We're just going to focus on this also, like create like a duopoly universe in the Facebook world.
Very bureaucratic, diplomatic way of saying it. Anyway, we're way over on time, so thank you very much for listening to our super deluxe edition of the 359. If you want to read more from these stories, check them out on CNET. I'm Ben Fox Rubin.
I'm Joni Salzman.
I'm Alfred Ng.
Thanks for listening.